level's okay.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, just, my name is Lindsay Nicholson, and,
Okay, we're here, Linda Nicholson and I are here. It's April 7th, 1997, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Women's Studies program / department and Linda's involvement in it and her memories of what went on. So why don't I start by asking you how you got involved with Women's Studies?
Okay, let's see. I came to the university in the fall of 1974. And I early on got to know some of the people who were involved in women's studies, but I wasn't exactly sure about how one became involved. I think it was a couple of years went by, and I'm not, this is all very fuzzy, might have been a year, I can't remember exactly, till I got something like a formal invitation or somebody invited me. That was my sense, is that was how it happened. And I went, and then I went. And I remember the meetings at those times. Most of the meetings, I can't remember, seemed to be a lot of them seemed to be at Joan's house in her living room. I remember being assigned or volunteering for a committee that was the program committee and working with Lib Burns. But we were sort of, I remember that committee, we were kind of in the dark a little bit about what we were supposed to do. I certainly was in the dark. And I can't remember what we actually did do. And in those early years, mostly I remember meetings which were in Joan's living room every couple of weeks. So it was sort of like festive social events as well as meetings. A very important turning point for me came, I think, I can't remember when it was, but my sense is I had been here a few years. It might have been as early as 76, maybe it was a few years later, I can't remember. When Judy Federley asked me if I'd like to teach one of the core courses, a course called, well, I don't know whether it was core then, but it was, asked me, there was a course that was people were thinking about called Feminist Social and Political Thought, and asked me if I'd be interested in teaching it. And I said I would be. Luckily, I was in a department at that time, Foundations of Education, where the department chair, Mark Berger, was flexible, nice guy, and so let me do stuff like this. I didn't have a split appointment with Women's Studies at the time. So I did it, and teaching that course, it was exciting for me, and I think it was very useful for me intellectually. It really enabled me to make the conceptual link between my past work, which had been political philosophy, and my political interest in feminism. I began to think about feminism as political philosophy, having worked on that course. In fact, that was the working title of my first book, Feminism as Political Philosophy. It later became took on a different title, Gender and History. But I think the ideas for it first came out of that teaching that course. It was very exciting, and I remember the first couple of sessions of, I remember Judy being there and Joan coming to the first couple of sessions of the class, and feeling very good about teaching that course. And I think having taught that course, that really involved me more in terms of the department of the program. More like a core person, less marginal.
Yeah.
Do you want me to
continue?
Okay.
And when you run out, I'll ask you another question.
Okay. Certainly a core or important transition in terms of my involvement with women's studies took place in the 1980s. 1982, I came up for tenure. I was in the Department of Foundations of Education at that time. And the department had recently lost its PhD program. And there was a recession. And the budgets had been cut. And there was a lot of talk about retrenchment. And the sense was that our department was very high on the list. And I went through a very problematic tenure year. And because, I mean, everybody said I was wonderful and I got unanimous votes, but it was clear that the president might deny me tenure on budgetary grounds. Which made the whole process very, very tense. And in fact, I wasn't notified at the time when most people are notified, was in which the formal proceedings were finished. My sense was, my memory is somewhere around March. But I actually ended up not getting an official letter until the end of July, and at one point in June, The president called me into his office with Bill Leary to say that he could deny that it wasn't a question of merit, but for budgetary reasons, he might in fact deny me tenure, and he could do it right now, or he could see what happened. And he was, I think, sort of getting my sort of official permission to let it drag on. And I said, of course, I'd much rather wait until if there was a possibility. I ended up getting it at the end of July, and that was, and lots of people fought for me, and one of the important groups that did was one of the studies who went to talk to him, and basically he said, so you're basically asking for a half line of studies, and people said, yes. Gave me tenure, and nothing happened then for about another year. I went up this time, I want to set the record straight, because some people say that I immediately went to women's studies. That's not what happened. What happened, because actually nothing happened. It was only about a year after that that there were just decisions about eliminating that department, with people going into different departments. And half, there was a six-person department, half went into one department of school of education, half went into the other. But I saw that as an opportunity, and this was really voluntary, that I had some leeway. People were being asked to choose where they wanted to go. So I saw this as an opportunity to gain some resources for women's studies, right, and move myself over, which give me flexibility in terms of teaching women's studies courses. I wouldn't have to be loaned out as a favor, but I would. So I officially requested that be half in the Department of Education and Administration and Policy Studies, and half in women's studies. So that request was granted, and I became officially half and half.
Our first non-director core faculty member, in fact, if I remember correctly.
Right, and that was in, my sense is about 83, I would guess.
Over the years, you've been very active in it's not really curriculum development, but in planning curriculum for the future, working on the master's program. Did you work on the certificate? Can you talk a little about those experiences? Because I think it's good to get that in the record.
On the certificate program, that went on for years. And it was under John Shoemaker, who was Dean of the College of Humanities by that time. And suddenly certificate programs became new. He was very into new things and new gimmicks and new ways of a real entrepreneur of an administrator. So women's studies thought, aha, we could get a certificate program. We would not be successful in getting a master's program, but we could develop a certificate program, and that this would be a way of beginning developing graduate work. And there was also at that time, I don't remember the years now, I guess it was later on in the 80s, where this university was putting the word public policy or policy after everything, and everything became the Department of, you know, Physics and Policy and everything. So that was the, and also because there is the strong emphasis in the Rockefeller College on public policy with strong graduate programs there. And then we thought we could relate it to the graduate programs in the School of Education and also to graduate programs of existing social science and sociology, for example. So we thought this would be a good idea to develop it. And it was really an opportunity also to for people who were involved in women's studies in Rockefeller College to also work with uptown people. We met for years, God, and finally hammered out a proposal.
Who were the people?
The people were Carrie Bann. Carrie was very involved. Helen DeFosses. I think Iris Berger was involved for a little while, I can't remember. And people who are no longer here, who were involved with the Center for Women in Government. I can see their faces, but I can't remember their names. The president, the woman who was then head of the Center for Women in Government. For the historical record, one of our early graduates, one of the early recipients of the certificate, is Judith Seidel, who is now presently head of the Center for Women in Government. So, in fact, Judith is a student of my classes. Norma Rapucci was involved. I don't know when. Yes, she was. Yes, that's where I first got to
know. Yeah. Well, once that got developed, then we went on to the master's program, another thing that has taken
years
a
and
life
years
of
years
its
and
own.
Years. It seems like before anything happens, it has to go through a zillion years of committees in women's studies discussing every aspect, and that certainly happened with the master's program. We had many, many years of, or maybe I'm exaggerating, but it feels like many years of committee meetings before we were able to get a proposal together. People were happy with. And then the final bit was, I think it was a couple of years ago, one summer, Judy Federman and I just really worked very hard, really writing it up. Right.
What do you see for the future? Assuming that that gets approved someday.
Right. Well, I mean, one would be tempted to say a PhD program, but I'm not sure because I've actually been thinking about the whole issue of the future of women's studies. It might be the case that women's studies does not continue to exist as a separable field. Certainly, and I'm myself, no, I'm sure there are people who disagree with me, I'm not sure that that would be a bad thing. Clearly it would be dependent on what you placed it with. But I think as we're coming to see gender as very much interrelated with other issues of race, class, sexuality, that it may come to be a point, important time where we can develop graduate programs that look at all of these issues together, and that for me would be an exciting kind of development. Yeah. I mean, certainly, I mean, one of the things that I guess, certainly we're looking at the issue of the relationship of sexuality more than we have been. And there's also been part of me that, that in some ways prefers the term gender as well. I mean, one of the problems with gender is that it doesn't connote it loses some of the connotations of power and connection with the women's movement, which I think is important about the term women's studies. But we're not just studying women's movement. And when one thinks about that, it's hard to separate out those issues from issues of sexuality. I don't. If we, by the point in time we get to a PhD program, it might not just be a PhD in women's studies. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all just dying right now.
You know, just yeah.
Over the years, there have been a number of issues that women's studies has dealt with, some more successfully than others, I suspect. And I wonder if you have, if there are any that stand out in your mind that you would care to talk about.
Issues, like, give me, I'm not sure.
Well, for a long time we had relatively strong community input into the program.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point that things changed.
Uh-huh.
And that we no longer have that same kind of input.
Uh-huh.
At least not directly from people.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. I haven't even really remembered that, but that's right. I think we've become, that certainly is the case, I think we've become more institutionalized, professionalized, and more at the beginning, with more like joining the kind of ad hoc, excessive community to the political movement, stronger connection. With our growth, we've become more bureaucratized, more academicized. That's a problem. But on the other hand, I think there are some good things about it. The good things are that when things are more formal, things like body, become less of an issue, more informal, with more informal structures, informal personality issues can more dominant. So I think we have definitely lost that. It's not been completely down to the wall either. I mean, it certainly might be one of the advantages.
Mm-hmm.
Money, faculty lines, secretaries, and offices. That's good. Yeah.
Another one of the issues. I mean, I'm feeding them to you, and I really sure. don't want to do that.
I don't know. Yeah, but
one of the let me preface this with one of the first meetings of the women's of the advisory committee that I went to, somebody said, I have a feeling there's an in with this person, and I don't remember who it was. Obviously didn't feel they were a part of the in
group. Right.
And I know that there has been this feeling on the part of some people,
mm-hmm.
and I wondered if you'd care to comment on it.
Well, I think the fact that so many of the people who were actively involved in starting the program and being certainly putting so much of the energy into the program, where personal friends lived together on State Street,
mm-hmm.
did lead to that. And I and lead to that perception. And I think I know some people get very defensive whenever this issue is even brought up, but I think there's a grain of truth to it. I mean, whenever I think there's any organization where some people are more active, more involved, are also close friends, there's going to be, and do talk informally. I lived on State Street. I know discussions did take place in the hallways and on the doorsteps and stuff like that. So there was a kind of community there that did have its own power, did generate its own power. And therefore, I think from time to time, others who were not getting themselves attached to that did bring it up. And I think at times, I remember once at a certain point, Chris Bowes and Glenna, putting a push for bylaws. And as I understand it, it was to try to undermine that sense of an in-group and to hear public, these are the ways that decisions get made, and we'll put it in writing, will be more formal. And I supported that move because it wasn't that whether or not there was an in-group, there was certainly the perception of one. And it struck me that having the formal structures are often useful.
Do you think that this issue is still?
No. I think there's been a lot of, the combination of the chair.
Departmental structure too is different. Many of the people who started out with women's studies are still here, but there are some people who have left. And I wondered if there are any who you care to recall, that you remember, who probably should be this sequence of history.
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to think who's left. Well, Marion Smiley was here, and she was, but she was an untenured assistant professor, so I think she was pretty marginal.
Well, of course, Ruth Schmidt, who was not in women's studies, but she was one
of but Ruth left. Also. Ruth had already gone by the time I got involved, so.
Me too.
Yeah, so I can't really talk about Ruth. I'm just trying to think of the last bit left. Can't think of anybody else.
Okay. What about students? Are there students you remember? Obviously. Let's talk about them. It's always interesting to know, to hear about the students.
One student I'll name and one student I won't name. Mm-hmm. The student I'll name is Danielle Kors. She has, I think she is on one of our most illustrious graduates. Mm-hmm. I remember her taking my undergraduate and my course down in social political thought. And she was, she's real smart and political and politicized, and she has this great class analysis and a committed Marxist, and she was just such a serious student and funny, and I remember her bringing to those classes stories about her grandmother. Her grandmother was fought the police who were trying to break up striking workers organizing by throwing marbles down the street, so there were the horses with the trip stumble over the marbles. I remember Danielle telling us those stories. Anyway, Danielle did an independent study with me because she wanted to learn more about Marxism. I don't do independent studies all that often. I had the real feel of students who really wanted to learn. It was using it to really want to learn about something, not as a way of, you know, easy doing, getting some easy credit. Danielle was a very serious student whom I saw on television. She was. I think she joined. She was working with a law firm. What's this guy's name? Very famous, anyway. Anyway, doing political cases with Jenny. You know what I remember, though, and I won't mention the name because one of the problems that women's studies has had has been struggles with the collective. And I remember, because sometimes the collective has given students the opportunity to take on much more responsibility and authority than they gain as students in probably any other context but this university. And students love it for good reasons. But sometimes students who have their own agendas, their own desires to be authority figures, exert inordinate amounts of power vis-a-vis their other students, and are very hostile, or have been hostile to the faculty in any way, interfering with the power they have managed to garner through this so-called collective. And so I remember cases of one student in particular, really being in battle with the faculty. I myself once taught the collective, the faculty person in charge of the collective, and it was exhausting. It was exhausting. The students wouldn't have stayed up for all hours of the night. But anybody who knows me knows that I stopped functioning after that. It was
right.
Yeah, and issues of and there are a lot of issues with students amongst each other, some students being more responsible and others being less so, and students being more responsible getting angry.
Yeah.
It's not an easy group to work with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I needed a coffee room.
So we were talking about the collective.
Yeah. My own experiences with it.
Right. What other courses have you taught for women's studies?
Okay, at the undergraduate level, the collective and the social and political thought. Now I'm teaching a new course about women, politics, and power. That's the undergraduate. Graduate, I've taught feminist theory, feminist thought and public policy. You know, I taught years ago, I think. I taught women in education. I did that for a while, but I haven't done it in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is a cross-listing graduate. The feminist theory course has been cross-listing 400, 500 levels.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, that's what I've taught.
Which are the most exciting ones, or are they all? Can you say that?
Well, I personally enjoy teaching that undergraduate feminist social and political thought the first time was great, but mostly teaching graduates. Is what I personally am much better at. I like to do theory, and undergraduates sometimes have a feeling of what's the purpose. They're less sort of acculturated to, they have less similar intellectual agendas as I do, so it becomes sometimes a little bit of a clash. They're concerned. I do a much better job as a teacher.
What would you like to see women's studies do, that the department do, that it doesn't do now?
I would like there to be more interaction with other departments, like African American Studies, with LACS. I would like there to be more more integration,
mm-hmm.
police departments that are looking at others will also consider the question. That's what the
that sort of goes along with your,
yeah,
your feeling about, or your hopes about the evolution,
right,
of,
right,
these kinds of,
right,
programs, disciplines, interdisciplines, whatever they are all.
Yeah. And I certainly would like, of course, for us to develop a graduate PhD. That has to do not just with my hopes here, but my hopes of graduate education become more interdisciplinary, there are more interdisciplinary possibilities.
Do you have any other things that you want to bring up? I've sort of been asking you questions, but sometimes things come up.
Well, but, women's studies have been a very important community for me. It's more than just an academic department. Overlap between academic, intellectual, political, social. Sometimes it has problems, but
right,
it also has a really positive aspects. So it's very important community.
Ha, 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 ha.